Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. This week with New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat who serves New York's 28th District on the east side of Manhattan. Welcome back, Senator Liz Krueger.
Thank you. Glad to be here with you.
Good to be with you as well. It's the now end of session. It has wrapped up. And something happened during the last week that I know, well, at least from what I've been reading, angered you. It made you pretty upset. You said it was a terrible move. And that is Governor Hochul pulled the plug on congestion pricing for Manhattan. And it put the onus on state lawmakers to come up with some way to fill that, which hasn't been done. This was because of the issue of the environment and keeping those extra cars out of Manhattan. A lot of people upstate, senators, Democrats, and Republicans didn't like it. There's all sorts of reasons not to do it, but there was one overriding reason to do it, and you suggested it. Why are we stopping this now? And political reasons, at least from some analysts, claim are at the heart of this. In other words, that stopping the program because it would be a bad move for Democrats in an election year.
Well, you've listed out a bunch of realities that no one likes to pay more money for anything. People don't like taxes. We talk about that all the time. But if you live in a cohesive society with government and laws and services so that you don't live in chaos, you pay taxes. The public transportation system, MTA, for 12 counties in the southern region of New York State is the most important mass transit system, I would say, in the world, based on the volume that it carries and the fact that the metropolitan region is the breadbasket for the entire region, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and the central business zone, which my district covers half of in lower Manhattan, is got a congestion crisis where we have 1.3 million people commute into that zone every day for work. 85% of them use mass transit, just 143,000 of them drive vehicles. And it's created a nightmare situation where the average speed of traffic in Midtown Manhattan is now 4.5 miles an hour, that there are so many cars on the streets that you literally can walk faster. And the environmental impacts are enormously problematic for air quality for people who live there and commute into there. And in fact, the research shows we lose $20 billion a year in lost time because of the traffic problem. So congestion pricing is a proposal that lots of people didn't like for all kinds of reasons. Well, we worked on it for 15 years at least, and it was the best option we could come up with to address the need for more money for the capital construction plan of the MTA to keep our mass transit system in a state of good repair and functioning as the largest mass transit system in this country, to address congestion by pulling, we estimate, 100,000 vehicles off the streets in the zone each day, and for environmental concerns, which the last couple of days, when you read the weather reports in New York City, basically they're saying try to stay out of outside, not just because the heat is so bad, but because the air quality is so bad. So this was something that was thought through, hearing after hearing, meeting after meeting, approval after approval, lawsuit to be won after lawsuit to be won, federal approval, state approval, city approval. Sure, plenty of people didn't think it was a great idea. Well, the other cities that have done it found that before it starts, people really are unhappy. And once it starts, people forget that it was even an issue. And then suddenly, on the last 2-3 days of session, when we're at our absolute busiest trying to finish so many other pieces of legislation, the governor simply announced she was pausing or not allowing congestion start pricing to start. And it was only 2-3 weeks away, scheduled to start June 30th. And it just knocked the wind out of everyone. So was I upset? Yeah, I was upset. And now I'm even more upset the more I think about it, because there's no alternative being proposed. And it can't just be a money alternative. We have to raise $1 billion a year so that the MTA can bond $15 billion immediately to complete projects they've already started. But there's no answer for how you address getting 100,000 vehicles off the streets in Manhattan, or how you address the environmental issues. So I keep waiting every day for someone to tell me, oh, here's an alternative plan that's going to solve all these problems. I have heard nothing.
Well, and at the time, you called for a lawsuit. Are we going to see any lawsuit as a result of this?
Well, I actually didn't call it for a lawsuit. I highlighted that I believed a number of her actions violated state laws. Other people then started to call for lawsuits, and a number of them have announced that they are working on them. I'm not a lawyer. I don't bring lawsuits. I'm a legislator. I read laws and I write laws. So I do believe there are a number of lawsuits in development, some of them around the issue of there was a state law that was passed. There were agreements with the federal government that were signed. There's the expectation now that we will lose an enormous amount of federal matching funds for the MTA. There had been a lawsuit specifically around commitments to make the subway system in New York City more disability accessible by providing elevators and escalators. That was a lawsuit that was agreed upon. The MTA had a plan of how it was going to expand subway station by subway station accessibility. I believe the disability community is planning one or more lawsuits. There are environmental laws that we passed in New York State requiring reductions in our carbon footprint, requiring reductions in the impact of pollution. I believe that there are lawsuits planned in the environmental community. And then there's just the fundamental obligation for the MTA board to be fiduciarily responsible and independent of the governor, even if she appointed them to be on the board. That was a 2009 law change on responsibilities and independence of public authority boards. So there's lots and lots of legal questions that I believe show we can't actually stop this now, but it will be others who end up determining whether there are legal challenges to be made and if they go to court.
Do you see this as just tabled for now and eventually it will get through?
I don't know. She said pause, but I heard end. If she wants to declare we're going to do a start date of X time within, you know, a short period of time, okay. I have not heard that. You also referenced the politics that some people were under the, I believe, incorrect analysis that this would help Democrats in the election. I don't know how long you've been following New York State politics, but 1999, there was another election coming up, and somebody in the Democratic Party came up with the great idea that if we got rid of the commuter tax, a tax people who commuted to work in New York City paid, because if they earn their living in New York City. So somebody came up with the idea that if we ended the commuter tax, Democrats would do very well in Long Island and the Hudson Valley. And so we did away with it. And we didn't gain any seats. We actually lost a seat. And we never got the commuter tax back after that. And if it had just continued over the course of 1999 to 2024, New York City would have received towards infrastructure and mass transit $19 billion that we lost for this very bad political guess. And I feel like I woke up in a rerun of that movie. It is not going to help us in the elections. And in fact, Republicans are already saying, we got the end of congestion pricing, vote for us.
Well, the whole thing with congestion pricing at the end was sort of a sign of the domino effect of failed environmental legislation. Before we get to the one that passed, the Climate Change Superfund Act, let's talk a little bit about the New York Heat Act and the Repackaging and Reduction Act. These were two high-profile bills. I've talked with you about them in the past. One would have ended subsidies for gas companies. Another would have reduced the prevalence of plastic packaging. But they didn't get through. It's quite something that when we all see the seriousness, and you've made this point of the warming climate, that we are failing in New York, which, after all, we called the Empire State. We've often heard former governors say we've got to lead the way when it comes to these things, not seemingly leading in this area.
Well, those are two very important bills that you're absolutely right. Most of us believed we were about to get across the finish line before the end of session. The New York Heat Act is my legislation, so I can speak with authority, that we were in what's called three-way negotiations, governor, assembly, and Senate, to work out differences between us so that we could bring that bill to the floor before the end of session and then have it signed by the governor. Literally, the minute the governor decided to switch gears, announce the end of congestion pricing, or stopping congestion pricing, all discussions on the New York Heat Act also ceased. Staff were no longer available for the completion of negotiations. They were busy, I guess, trying to come up with a better answer than what she had done. I don't know. But we never considered finished negotiations on the New York Heat Act. Hence, we left session without passing it in both houses, which was extraordinarily disappointing, not just to those of us who worked on the bill, but for an enormously large coalition of environmental groups, local governments, who knew that we needed to do this, and we had failed to do it now for several years. We passed it in the Senate, but we could not get it past the Assembly and the governor.
What's up with the Assembly and the Speaker, Carl Hastie? He seemed to be the backstop there. In the comments, at least that I heard, he said things like, well, this will actually cost more for consumers in the end.
Well, sometimes the two houses don't agree. I don't believe that Speaker Hastie had all of the facts in front of him when he made that statement, if he made that statement. The New York Heat Act was set up to change New York State law so that you no longer have to continue to build and renew gas pipes where you're not using gas or oil for the buildings that they're attaching to. So we have this almost absurd situation in the state right now that we did pass the CLCPA to target reduction in oil and gas and our carbon footprints, et cetera, a giant bill, a very important bill. And we did pass an all-electric building law so that new buildings being built after 3 years from now, I think, you're not going to be able to use oil and gas in those buildings. And yet the existing law requires you to continue to build oil and gas pipe infrastructure to those buildings. Well, that seems more than absurd to have to build an infrastructure that you're not going to use that costs a huge amount of money. So the New York Heat Act is estimated to save ratepayers about $300 million a year just in unnecessary continuation of building gas oil infrastructure when it's not needed. We also built into the bill a commitment that no more than 6% of your annual income could be charged in utilities, and that there would be a backstop if for any household they hit that 6% cost. So that also saves ratepayers. So I'm not really sure what the reference was that you just offered from the speaker, but I'm quite sure that the New York HEAT Act would not be a new expense for any of us who are ratepayers in the state of New York.
Right.
So I do understand the concept that when you're creating new things or expanding on things, there are costs. There is a reality, especially in energy, that those are upfront costs, especially if you're talking about shifting to renewable energy. Yes, there are upfront costs to changing over from oil-burning boilers to geothermal, but then you look at the data and you see that within a very short period of time, the cost of replacing your system to geothermal radically reduces your annual cost. So over X amount of time, you're actually saving money. But yes, people who are in the oil business will tell you it costs money to transition to something else. But in the situation of the New York HEAT Act, we're talking about not putting in pipes. It doesn't cost you money. It saves money.
Well, now let's go to a big one that did pass, the Climate Change Superfund Act. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I've been passing that for a couple of years. I'm very excited about that bill, and I'm very, very excited. But literally at the last minute, one of the last bills, I believe, that the Assembly passed with a big debate was the same as bill in the Assembly. Jeff Dinowitz has carried that bill in the Assembly for several years, was working very hard to get it to the floor. And you'd have to ask him how he did it at that moment in history, but it came to the floor and it passed. So now we need to get the governor to sign. What is that? That's also a very simple bill. We already know that we have precedent in law for superfunds for pollution. We have a federal superfund bill that holds responsible the people who cause the pollution in land to have to pay for the cleanup of the land. This bill is modeled on the very same concept, except for pollution of air and water. And so it would assess a fee on the 35 to 40 largest oil gas companies in the world based on data that has been done by world famous economists of how much each of them have created of the world climate damage, and then calculate out percentage of population in different locations, including in New York State, what share of the pollution damage is hitting us, and assesses those companies an amount of $3 billion a year for 25 years, $75 billion, that they have to pay to us as a penalty, or it's not a penalty as much as it's a requirement to help us address the damage they have caused. So it's an assessment, not a tax. It's not a penalty in the sense of a legal case. It is an obligation on them to help us pay the far greater cost. We, the taxpayers, are stuck with mitigating and addressing the damage that their actions have caused. So we are already spending probably upwards of $1 billion a year, and it'll just keep growing, to deal with the damage caused by environmental change from the pollution they cause. Flooding, fire, increased water table, having to redesign our mass transit systems, our public highways, actually in New York City and in Long Island and in other sections of the state, redesign our coastline because of the changes in the flooding levels and the destruction of our beaches. So literally, very quickly, it will be billions and billions a year that we are pouring into the repair and upgrading caused by climate damage. If they don't help us pay it, we pay it all. And so it's basically fundamentally, you did the damage, you should help pay for the repair.
You're listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina, and we're speaking with New York State Senator Liz Krueger. She's a Democrat from New York's 28th District on the east side of Manhattan. Now, you had another bill. It didn't make it through the assembly, but it's an interesting one, and it has a real impact. And that is your bill, which the Senate passed, tackling unregistered mopeds.
The fact is, mopeds are defined as motor vehicles under New York state law. It is already illegal to drive them without a license plate, without a driver's license, and without insurance. However, we don't seem to require, when you purchase a moped, that you show that you have a driver's license and insurance, and that the seller of the moped is making sure the vehicle is registered and has a license plate before it leaves the store. Now, you'll go, oh, wait, that's what I do when I buy a car. That's right. That you have to do all of that when you buy a car. You have to show you have a driver's license. You have to show you have health. You have insurance for the vehicle. And a license plate for the vehicle is placed on the vehicle before you leave the dealer, if you're buying it used, the used car dealership. Mopeds are supposed to be under the exact same law, but we forgot to require that anyone selling mopeds has to make sure that all of that is happening before they sell you the vehicle. So this law very simply would require you follow the same rules for selling mopeds as you do for selling other cars and trucks and motorcycles. And so I am very disturbed that these bills, there was a combination of two bills, one by my colleague Brad Hoyleman-Siegel and one by me, one to require you have to show you have the insurance and the driver's license, the other that you have to show that there's a registration and license plate on the vehicle. And they did not make it over the finish line. And I think there it was probably just a matter of not enough time to get everything done. I'm not sure there was actual people moving against that bill. It is critical for those of us who live in crowded urban areas. In New York City, I believe that the NYPD reports that they have taken more mopeds off the streets for not having vehicles than the total number of mopeds that are actually correctly licensed and license plated in New York City. What's wrong with that picture? So we need to address this. We need to make it clear that there are big penalties for anybody who is buying or selling these without following the law.
Well, we're running out of time very fast. I have time for one more question, and I want to get your reaction because this just came across the news, a proposed amendment to New York's Constitution to prohibit discrimination based on gender identity and pregnancy outcomes has been restored to the November election ballot by a state appeals court. A panel of mid-level appellate judges Tuesday overturned an earlier decision by an upstate judge to strike the proposed Equal Rights Amendment from the ballot over procedural error. The state constitution currently bans discrimination based on race, color, creed, or religion. The proposed amendment would add several categories, including sexual orientation, gender identity, pregnancy, and reproductive health care. Voters in the 2024 election would need to approve the amendment before it becomes final. The move, I'm guessing you approve of.
I carried the amendment. I'm very proud that I was one of the authors of the bill for the Senate. And then there was an assembly sponsor as well. And so, yes, I, of course, approve it. And you forgot to leave. You left out a bunch of important categories. People with disabilities would also finally have constitutional rights and protections. And older New Yorkers, because shockingly, our Constitution doesn't cover them and doesn't even cover the word woman. So our Constitution was last updated for discrimination rights in the 1930s. We were thinking about the world very differently back then. And these are very, very real issues where people can be discriminated against on all these different categories, even if they think they're protected by some individual law. The catch is you only know you don't have those rights when something goes into a courtroom through a case and you discover you don't have protections. You know, being Latino or Hispanic in New York State is not a covered category. because it's not recognized as a race. It's a common language history. So, yes, you are protected by race if you're African American, but no, you're not. You don't have the same legal protections under our Constitution if you identify as Latino or Hispanic. And I just think it's so important for people to understand what rights they don't really have. And as we've learned, thank you very much, U.S. Supreme Court Dodd's decision and other decisions since then, things that we thought we were protected under law by, we were protected by the courts by, we can't count on anymore. We have to strengthen our state constitutions to make explicit our ability not to be discriminated against because some new governor or legislature comes in that decides they don't like us.
She is Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat, serves New York's 28th district on the east side of Manhattan. I can't tell you how much we appreciate you taking the time to talk about the legislation that's both gone through and has not gone through, at least yet, in the state legislature. And we can only hope you'll come back and speak with us again in the future.
Happy to. Thank you for inviting me.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.
Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.